I'm Mark Bayshore. Welcome back to Current State for Friday, the last day of the month. It's been kind of a quiet week at Lake Wobegon and at the Michigan State Capitol as most Michigan legislators take a summer break, but state Supreme Court decisions and 2016 ballot efforts and, of course, road funding still managed to make news in July. Here to review some of those developments are our July Month in Review Capitol correspondent. Tim Skubik covers the Capitol for Michigan Public Television's Off the Record and other outlets too numerous to mention. Welcome back, sir.
Hey, Marky. Good to see you.
And Susan J. Demas is publisher and editor of Inside Michigan Politics. Welcome back.
Thank you.
We have been spending more and more time on this program discussing possible ballot referendums for 2016. And last week, we got one that turned my head, at least, a union-sponsored effort to raise Michigan's corporate income tax from 8% to 3%. Tim, you spent some time on this on Off the Record. Break this down for us.
Well, if you like your politics dirty and ugly, here's your issue.
Okay.
This is going to be a huge ballot battle between business and labor. It's already begun, and it'll get worse before it gets better. Basically, they got the green light yesterday from the Board of Canvassers to start this petition drive. It's an initiative petition drive to raise the corporate income tax rate. The unions are saying the corporations are not paying their fair share. We would like to take back half of the tax break that the governor gave them his first year in office, take that money and put it either into the roads or to the schools. This is a populist issue. The businesses are saying, why are you coming after us? We are the people that are creating jobs. And if you do this to us, some people will lose their jobs. It's just a bad idea. And so we're engaged, and this will be an interesting fight.
Mm. Is this about road revenue, Susan? Or where would this revenue go if such a proposal got anywhere?
It is for road revenue, which everybody agrees we need.
Okay.
Nobody agrees how to get there.
Tell us more about some of the responses this generated.
Well, needless to say, the Michigan Chamber of Commerce is up in arms about this. Certainly they're big fans of the corporate income tax break that they received in 2011. They're calling it class warfare. And, you know, this is the latest stage between business and labor. We've seen lots of clashes.
Now, could this force preemptive action in the legislature similar to minimum wage? Is that part of the thinking here?
Well, the answer to that is yes. We don't know if that would happen. An interesting thing happened at the Board of Canvassers yesterday. One of the Republican members said, you know what, let's assume they get the petition signatures and this goes to the legislature. Theoretically, the legislature could pass this initiative on one day and come back the next day and undo it. Mm. And Mark Brewer, who's the attorney for the union, said, they're probably right. Mm-hmm. But politically, he doesn't think the Republicans in the legislature would do that. Susie, I think they might.
Well, when we've seen what they did with Right to Work and so many other pieces of legislation, they're very bold.
Well, they would take a hit for a day, okay, because
right.
Brewer says, well, they'd be criticized for taking money away from the roads. So the Republicans would say, this is, you know, we think we got to take care of business so mm-hmm. it'll create jobs so we can raise money for the roads. It's going to be a fascinating issue.
Wasn't it a similar scenario with minimum wage in Michigan?
Well, in that case, the Republicans acquiesced because they did not want a ballot initiative and they were afraid it would drive Democratic turnout last year. So they actually passed a more moderate increase to undercut and wipe away the ballot initiative. They could certainly do that here. I think the scenario Tim brings up is a more fascinating and perhaps a more likely scenario.
Mm. An interesting angle presented, though, by Charlie Owens of the National Federation of Independent Business. This appeared on MERS, that such a tax increase, and this gets back to a comment of yours, Tim, such a tax increase would, quote, absolutely, unquote, mean the loss of union jobs. Is it plausible that labor might not be so gung-ho about this for that reason?
Well, you have to look at which unions are behind this so far.
Who is that?
Well, they are the construction people, operating engineers, there's a labor council, and the carpenters, who are the more conservative of the unions. Noticeably missing from the news conference, the UAW, the Teamsters, the heavyweights, who I think are sort of sitting on the sidelines. If you're the UAW, and you're negotiating with the auto companies right now for the companies to give you something back, do you suppose the guys on the other side of the table might say, how in the heck can we do that if you're sitting there wanting to take away one of our tax breaks? Mm-hmm. You know, go do the math, folks.
It's Current State Month in Review on WKAR. We're taking a look back at July with Tim Skubick of Michigan Public Television's Off the Record, seen on WKAR-TV, and Susan J. Demas of Inside Michigan Politics. Is it a slam dunk that they'll... just one more question on the corporate income tax proposal. Is it a slam dunk that they'll get the signatures?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
I agree.
Interesting. A June survey that got some ink. A June survey by Greenberg Quinlan Rosner Research of 600 likely November 2016 voters found that 69% favor asking corporations to, quote, do their fair share, unquote, after being given $2 billion in annual tax relief. I'm quoting from MERS on that. We'll keep an eye on it. Susan, you followed the ballot efforts to legalize marijuana in Michigan. Remind us what things people are being asked to put their signature to here.
Well, there are actually three separate initiatives. Only two of them have had their language approved by the State Board of Canvassers. And one of the efforts by the Michigan Cannabis Coalition says that they already gathered 40,000 signatures in 12 days.
Pretty impressive.
I would say so.
They need just over a quarter million.
And most of those were in Ann Arbor.
Okay.
Sorry.
what's your take on the marijuana?
Look, there's a hidden agenda here. You have the issue, and then you have the Democrats who are secretly behind the scenes praying that with marijuana on the ballot, the young people that normally don't show up in off-year elections will show up in this one.
And make other
even though this
happen.
Is not an off-year election. But to generate that, those people that show up for Mr. Obama but don't show up for other people, that this will motivate them to get to the polls. I think we're going to have this issue. The polling data suggests that this would likely pass. The question is, where does the revenue go? And you've got some people, though, who are saying, let's sort of step back and not rush into this. Let's look at the example of Colorado and the state of Washington and study them a little bit longer before we jump in with both feet.
These are pretty different proposals, though, aren't they, Susan?
Yes. The one that has not gotten the stamp of approval from the canvassers is probably the most radical proposal. Felons would be able to be in possession of plants. The number of plants is a lot higher. The Paul Weldes, Susie Mitchell proposal, which we haven't heard as much about, is modeled on the Ohio model. It's kind of, there are a select number of growers, I believe 10 or 12, kind of creates a monopoly situation. Mm-hmm. And then the one that we've heard the most about and appears to be the furthest along from the Cannabis Coalition is kind of meeting in the middle and would not allow felons. And puts in the hands of the legislature to determine how it's taxed, where the but it determines where the money is going, roads, schools, fighting crime.
The fascinating thing about this debate and gay marriage is if we were sitting here 20 years ago, we wouldn't be talking about this.
How far the society
and the values have changed to the point where I think we're looking seriously at this thing passing if it gets on the ballot.
And you don't have to go back 20 years to draw that contrast either. I would follow up. It's more like five.
It's a significant shift.
Oh, for sure.
As they say in sports, it's a game changer.
Yeah. The Michigan Supreme Court issued a couple of rulings I'd like to bring up. First, that the state's right-to-work law does apply to public employee unions. Revisit the background of this for us, Susan.
Well, the law passed in December of 2012, and it was supposed to apply to all union workers. The case that we have in Michigan is a little different than other states because we have a civil service commission that is supposed to handle state employee contracts. And so the argument that the unions made was right to work doesn't apply to us because we're under the Civil Service Commission. Not surprisingly, a Republican majority Supreme Court saw it differently.
It was a 4-3 decision involving
7-1. It wouldn't have made any difference. 4-3, you know.
Agency shop fees, which is the money used to reimburse the unions for the costs of collective bargaining. The court pointed out that its decision they claimed it was not based on the right-to-work law, but rather it looked at the state Civil Service Commission's authority as defined in the Constitution, basically saying the CSC does not have that authority. Ray Holman of UAW 6000 took issue with that.
It's just unfortunate that it would appear that the Constitution that was ratified in 1963 is not holding water with this court.
The public sector is still, is it fair to say, dominated by labor unions?
Well, you've got, what, 54,000 people in state government, and a bunch of them are under one union or another. But here's the real story here, and the hidden agenda, the unions would say. The Republicans talk a good game about giving right to choose for the workers. But what they're really after is the coffers of unions who take those union dues and then use them against Republicans to win elective office. That's the hidden political agenda here. And this takes away another source of revenue, which is significant for the unions. We don't know how many people in state government will decertify as union members. They don't have to do anything. But that's part of what's going on here as well politically.
How big a setback is this, though, for the unions? Does adding the public sector to the private manufacturing sector make a really big difference?
Yes, because the public sector is far more unionized than the private sector at this point. I would say that I think this was a defeat the union saw coming, and I would assume they've planned for it. But, you know, then again, maybe not.
Current State here on WKAR, Tim Skubick and Susan J. Demas join me, Mark Bayshore. We are looking back on the news, Michigan news here in the month of July. In another ruling, the Supremes ruled that Michigan's sentencing guidelines that mandated prison terms are unconstitutional. What does this mean?
Well, this is a major decision, and it comes in the context of a renewed effort in the legislature and by this governor to look at prison reform, which for the critics is basically open the jail cells and let everybody out. The governor is not attempting to do that, but I think they're trying to be more selective to try to reduce the prison population. We just had Craig DeRoche on the program, and he's the former Speaker of the House, and working on this issue nationally. He sort of took on Bill Schuette, who has been kind of a voice in the wilderness saying, let's be very careful here. Remember, we have victim families that we have to take care of. And Mr. DeRoche is basically saying that Mr. Schuette's approach to this, he does at his own political peril, because he believes the Koch brothers and others are on the side of prison reform, which is to get the people out of the prisons who probably shouldn't be there. Mr. DeRoche says between 60 and 80% of the people in the slammer right now are there based on drug addiction, alcohol addiction, or some disease like that. Now, he's not saying let everybody out, but the big fear, of course, is if you open the prison doors and some people come out, they might do nasty things to society. Joe Hoffman, who is the former chair of the House Appropriations Committee, addressed this issue basically saying that is a risk we have to take because the overall good for society outweighs that risk, which is a very controversial thing to say.
I want to clarify something you said, though, a second ago. Who is someone saying open the doors and let them all out?
No,
or is somebody...
The critics who are trying to fight this will use that card to say this is just, you know, get everybody out of prison, everything will be fine. Okay, DeRoche says this is not a budgetary issue, this is a value issue, and he believes that a lot of conservatives are coming on board. He's talked to Joe Biden about it, and if the Koch brothers get involved on his side, this could be interesting.
Well, it is a budget issue. You know, that's probably not the most popular argument to make, but prisons cost $2 billion every year for Michigan.
It is frequently invoked, for sure.
We spend more money on them than we do on college.
Absolutely. And, you know, there is a growing strain of thought, even within the Republican Party, that the 90s and 80s tough-on-crime mantra, especially under John Engler, went too far, is costing us too much, and is putting too many people away.
That's why the Supreme Court decision basically says and gives to the judges more latitude rather than being told that you have to send somebody in for 15 years. Mm-hmm. The judge will look at each individual case rather than lumping everybody in together. So this Supreme Court decision comes at a critical time in this debate. In talking to the governor the other day, he's going to be in full square trying to work this prison reform issue when lawmakers get back in the fall.
I do want to revisit here Craig DeRoche here because you're just coming off an interview with him, and we will definitely get to that here in a minute. I want to find out more about that. Governor Snyder did not dust off his take a vote, not a vacation line, but legislators did leave town last week for another month or so, and we still don't have a road funding measure. I'm not certain anyone really expected one at this point, really, but where exactly did they leave this, Susan?
Well, the House and Senate have very disparate plans. The Senate actually did raise the gas tax 15 cents. The House, I believe in the words of the conservative Detroit News editorial board, did a smoke and mirrors type of plan where you're shifting money around and economic growth will cover the billion or so dollars that we need. Now the House is contemplating the Senate plan, or perhaps, you know, they'll work together to come up with something else. But, you know, everybody is responding to this ballot initiative as well. And so if things were as clear as mud before, they're even more so now.
Well, the Speaker ruled out the 15-cent proposal from the Senate. But I think there's a number that he has in his head lower than that that they will try to sell. So far, not enough people are buying. But significant development this week, for those of you that like good government, the quadrant, that's the two Democratic leaders, for the first time were invited to a phone conversation with the governor and the two Republican leaders for the first time this year to begin in a bipartisan way to try to find a solution on this thing. Look, I think the governor, with a handful of Republicans and a larger handful of Democrats, could actually get something through the House if they decide to go that route.
Where does Speaker Cotter stand?
I think he's on board with some sort of a modest gas tax increase or revenue increase. It could be a registration fee, but he has not ruled it out. The problem is he's leading the parade, but as he looks over his shoulder, there's nobody in the clarinet section.
Are hearts and minds being changed here then? Is it fair to say that?
Everybody agrees that something has to be done, but Republicans don't want to raise taxes. Democrats don't want to see things like the earned income tax credit be killed. So they're still very far apart.
The Michigan Pipeline Task Force came out with a much-anticipated report on pipeline safety this month. Four particular recommendations for Enbridge's Line 5 running through the Straits. What's the significance of this report, Tim?
Well, it depends on whether you're Bill Schuette or the environmental lobby. Bill Schuette thought this was a great report and basically said, hey, we're on top of this thing and we need more information. I thought it was interesting. They took about a year to study this situation, and one of the recommendations was, we need more information from the Enbridge people. And I'm wondering, so why didn't you get the information during the year that you had? Mr. Schuette is confident that eventually, one of the pieces of information missing, by the way, was the inspection reports from the oil company as to how safe the pipeline was. Well, that's what the report was about. And they didn't get those documents. I mean, goodness gracious. But Mr. Schuette and Dan Wyatt, who I thought was a little more forthcoming on the issue of is the pipeline safe? He basically said, we need more information before I can answer that question.
Well, one recommendation that some agreed with and some environmentalists apparently thought was a little empty was a recommended ban on heavy crude going through the Straits. Here is co-chair of the Pipeline Task Force, Dan Wyatt, here on Current State with a little about that recommendation.
Preemptive strike is a great way to say it. You take it off the table. Going from this day forward, the public just needs to know there'll be no heavy crude through that pipeline, because all other crude would float. All other crude would be easier to manage in the event of a spill.
Susan, your thoughts?
Well, the argument from environmentalists is that, you know, while we're waiting for all this new information, we have a pipeline that is decades old and nobody knows just how safe it is and what if disaster strikes.
And Craig DeRoche, tonight on Off the Record, he has just written a book about his struggle with alcoholism.
Yeah. It's a compelling story.
Yeah.
It really is. This guy was elected Speaker of the House as a drunk.
Yeah.
And he knew it.
And he admits it.
Yeah, he does.
And
I asked him, I said, well, was that an irresponsible decision then, knowing that you were an alcoholic, to become the top leader in the Michigan House? And his answer was basically this. As a result of that, God found a way for him to solve his alcoholism problem. I guess you never solve it, but to deal with it. And he thinks in the long run, it was okay. It's an interesting story. He's got a book out on it.
Yeah. Got to check it out. Off the Record tonight on WKAR-TV and other Michigan public television radio stations. Thanks to Susan J. Demas of Inside Michigan Politics and Tim Skubick of Michigan Public TV.